Blog Talk Radio.
Network Empowerment 365 is 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. I'm Marvin Rohn, your host, and for the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking about issues, concerns, activities, actions, and things that are happening in the African American community. Right now, you guys know we're dealing with COVID-19, and we know there's some issues that we need to discuss. We have some people on the line, and looking forward to my co-host, Sam Macklin, joining us as well. So we're going to talk about some things. We're going to get to the business of talking about what's happening in the African-American community and what we can do to motivate, inspire, and empower ourselves. So we all know this week has been a really active week in politics and in the community with all of these things going on. And we want to be able to bring the message to you, talking about what we can do, looking at solutions, actions, again, activities, and things that we could do to change the direction of what's going on in the community. And so the first thing that I'll bring up is I want to talk about mental health, and I want to talk about how that's impacting our community and what we need to do. So if we bring in some callers live right now, we'll talk about mental health. We'll also get to the business of talking about recent protests in Michigan, as well as some of the economic woes that have been impacting our community, and also questionable leadership that leading to what I feel is the unraveling of our American society, and it's coming apart at the seams. Callers, what do we have? Who's on the line with me today? Talk to me, callers. I need somebody to talk to.
Hi, this is Yolanda.
Hey, Yolanda, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Who else do I have on the line? Anyone else? Okay, so we'll get into it. Today we are looking at what we could do to address some of the issues that seem to be plaguing our community right now. So we talked about mental health on last week, and that's what we ended with. So I wanted to start the show with that. And I know I had a few phone calls this week talking about some people who are really getting to a point where they're really stressed in terms of the economic piece of having to be locked in at home and not being able to work. But also, the stimulus checks have just come out. We need to decide how we're going to manage those checks and how we're going to manage those resources. But one individual in particular is really dealing with, I would say, the issues that he has in terms of child support. And so child support took that stimulus check, and he is unraveling, if you will. So we have a lot of things going on, and I hope you guys will chime in with me. We're looking at talking about issues, and I'm here live right now. So if you have anything you'd like to share, this is a great time to do it now. Call us. Talk to me. My line's open.
Hi. Yeah, this is Yolanda. So,
hey, Yolanda.
I was just going to touch on one of the topics you said you were going to bring up today, which was the protest in Michigan. And after seeing that it really is just a sign of how fragile our democracy is, but how fragile white people particularly are in this pandemic. And to me, it really isn't about rights. This is more of a display to me of sort of their underlying nature of being, you know, not being used to being told what to do. But I think this is a, if you look at the people who stormed the Capitol with guns in Michigan, and you look at that, you know, juxtaposed to if black people were to do something like that, and I think we could probably all similarly agree it wouldn't have ended the same way. But I think that with white people, particularly angry white people, in a time like this, what's really interesting to me is that they have a platform now. It's a slow news cycle. I mean, COVID-19 is covering everything. And so I think this is less about their rights, honestly, than it is more about them having a tool or an outlet to continue to express their underlying anger around, you know, lots of different things, but their underlying anger, as well as just having a platform to have someone to listen to them, in addition to you having Trump tweeting, right, that he thought they were very good people, very fine people, similar to Charlottesville, right? So you have the president, you talked about questionable leadership, you have a leader of the free world basically telling these people, well, what they're doing is okay, who would never do that if this was any person of color in any type of way.
Well, you know, from what we dealt in terms of the Black Panthers having the ability to arm themselves for protection of the community, and I think you're right in terms of African Americans arming themselves and what that would look like. I think if African Americans took up arms and stormed the Capitol, the National Guard, as well as all forces among the United States military, and probably some of their allies would come to squash that really quickly, no matter what the purpose was. I think, again, in speaking to the, I would say, the backlash, they have privileges that we just don't have, and I think we need to face that. They are able to address their concerns in a way that we are never going to do. And I think it's up to us to come up with positive strategies that we're going to use, whether it's politically, economically, culturally, socially, to be able to address some of these issues that we could get an even and level playing field in this country. I'm not sure if we could do it, but a dialogue has to start somewhere. Any afterthoughts on that, caller?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that, you know, they do have privileges we don't have, and I think even if you look from a historical context, the NRA, which is the largest gun lobbying group in the United States and you know, in the world, is that they rarely are for gun control. But in the 1960s, when the Black Panthers had weapons and they became a so-called threat on the radar of the FBI, even then, the NRA supported gun control. They supported gun control, and this was particularly in California. They supported gun control that will control the amount of weapons specifically that the Black Panthers could have. So that tells you there, right, that when we try to exercise the same rights in the same type of ways, even then on a larger organization and institutional scale, that they're going to try to take those away from us. And I just found that really interesting because, again, if you know anything about the NRA, they are spending millions and billions of dollars to keep guns in people's hands in the streets with very little control. And so for them to then, because this one group was becoming, again, a so-called threat to the FBI, that they did that. So that, to me, that's just that's one piece of history that shows us. We could talk about a lot of different things, but I think at the end of the day, we have to get people, particularly in positions, political positions, to be able to make a difference, right? We can protest and we can do things, again, not given the same credit as white people. And so, you know, death and violence is going to be more intimately tied to our protest than it is going to be for anybody's protest who doesn't look like us. And so I think that we can do that, and that's a viable option, but we have to do things that are going to shift the paradigm of power and inclusion. And I think that starts not only with voting, but getting people to run for office that can actually make institutional and organizational change.
That's a great point, Yolanda. Is there really liberty and justice for all in this country? And how can we find that justice? And I think you made a good point. Politically, we have to become more effective. We have to have better strategies. We have to become better organized. And this is not against white people. I think this is for the promotion and the production of positive living in the African-American community. So we'll also talk, today I want to talk about the COVID-19 and what I want to call survival of the fittest. And we talked about a few weeks ago the health disparities that we know African-Americans are facing with this pandemic, but also that following week there was discussions about opening up the country. And I think if you open up the country knowing that we are in the bullseye, if you will, how does that really look, and how does that play out for African-Americans who have major health disparities? And I think even many of us are sitting at home now eating the wrong food, not working out, and not addressing our health issues as we should. And this is not a blanket statement, more than we have to look at some of the issues. What do you think, Carlos? Stan, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Brother, welcome to the show.
You can hear me?
Yes. You're live
okay.
And on air.
Yes, I'm here.
We're talking about COVID-19 and right now the survival of the fittest. And I was just mentioning to our listeners that, you know, they're opening up the country again, and we seem to be targets of many of us of the pandemic. What are your thoughts, Dan?
Well, I was just reading the devastating effects how this pandemic has had its toll on the poorest ward in Washington, D.C., the 8th Ward. And that is the, you might say, the epic center of where all the political power and decisions are made, but yet you have in the 8th Ward, in that same city, you have some of the worst cases of COVID-19 right there in the Capitol. So it shows the disparity that exists between the almighty and those who are less than the haves. And, you know, as I've been studying this whole thing, when it started in Wuhan, it definitely, regardless if it was however it came into existence, it got out of hand. It got out of hand. And cover-ups and whatever things that happened to try to play it down, that got out of hand to the extent that even those that had the knowledge of it didn't share it with the masses. And now we're the victims. We're the victims of this catastrophe. And it's a killer catastrophe is the sad point about it. And coupled with a lot of the things that we have ongoing with us as a people, if it's not for caring individuals such as yourself, as head of National African American Empowerment Association, then we know some things about survival, but it's organizations like yours that help to make a difference. So it's going to take, I've come to the conclusion that this one here is definitely all on God. It's going to take a straight, all-out effort from God to help rescue us out of this man-made catastrophe, because the way it seems is that evil men and seducers have unleashed a virus that has just gotten out of control, and it has engulfed the whole planet. This planet is in jeopardy in terms of mankind. So that's my perspective. I mean, I think we can try to apply a lot of the principles that can help us. It'll help navigate us through this here. But we're just gonna have to literally just call out before God, regardless if even if you don't believe in God, and ask for His mercy, ask for His grace to help us in the midst of this here, because life as it is not going to be the same. It is not the same. And I know that the Bible does permit times of crisis, because crisis brings about creativity, brings about change, brings about renewal. But this here is something that has never on the face of this earth come into existence. And I know there's other perspectives we can take, and we can talk about it, but I think we're just going to have to just give a big SOS out to God and ask for His mercy on this one, because man has really messed up.
Well, we got the lines full right now, packed. And so we have the lines are open, callers. If you want to comment on what Stan mentioned, or you want to, you know, bring in some points of your own, feel free to do so right now. The line is open. Talk to me, caller.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I just want to challenge a couple of points from the standpoint of going forward, what we do next. And I'd like to hear some thoughts about how effective we can shift the narrative of how we're defining a lot of our opportunities and success in terms of what white America will allow, or the systems that they've used to oppress the growth and the success and economic independence of our community, in terms of us defining our own systems and our own circles, whether it be economic, spiritual, health-wise. I think that I'm familiar a little bit with those who have decided to create their own circles of economic influence for the funding of businesses, as well as making microloans for research ideas and even buying homes. What do we say about bringing back black institutions that can be used to grow black economic independence, which is the key stronghold in a capitalistic society? You got to have something that people want to barter with, and in America, that's cash. So can you speak a little bit to creating our own systems, as opposed to continuing to try to define or to tear down the strongholds that have been built up against us?
Okay, well, I'll start here, Dan. I'm going to kick you back off.
Well,
I want to use this word that comes from Kwanzaa, and it's called Kuji Chagalia, and it's self-determination. And I think what you're speaking to, listener, is that we have to be able to determine some things for ourselves, whether that's politically, whether that's economically, whether that's socially or culturally, or even in terms of education. I think we have to have a strong political agenda that's national, that is really effective at placing people like Yolanda mentioned in positions of leadership that will understand the needs of the African-American community and work toward getting those things addressed. What do you think, Stan?
Well, you know, I mean, this is a historical, pragmatic situation. She brought up some very profound insights from the standpoint that if you look at America's original sin, this whole country was established on exclusion. exclusion of the original inhabitants, which was the Native Americans. And then they tried to work them, and they didn't. Of course, they knew the territory. They would escape and fall them to the very teeth, till they almost brought them to near genocide. Then they brought in kidnapped Africans and brought them in here to work it. And so, you know, we're working in a system that was designed to support white supremacy. So we're never going to fit into this here. We should never even think that we're supposed to fit in this here. Because we have not learned the importance, we've forgotten it. I'm not going to say we haven't learned, because we come from a place where there is continuity and cohesiveness. But we need to have institutions that define our own reality. We're always trying to fit in, and we shouldn't have to do that. We need to take our own brilliant minds and expertise and develop what it takes to establish the reality for us to exist. But we're so dependent. We've become so dependent and codependent on this system that we think it's the American dream, but it's really American nightmare. So it's not designed on anything but exclusion and not inclusion. And so it's problematic. It's problematic. The thing that has helped us, the number one institution that helped us, was the church, and we got away from it. Even in the motherland, they have even in primitive worship, they have a form of reality where they worship God, and so it's just that we brought into this here bag of goods, and it is spoiled right in front of us. And we're seeing what has unfolded right before our eyes, the damnation of having dependency on a system that does not serve us at all. So that's why I said I've come to the conclusion that all you can do is cry out. Sure, we can try to do things. We can do things, and we've always had geniuses within our nation. George Washington Carver, he was a great scientist, and there's others. And, you know, the ladies that helped to get the men up in outer space and so forth. But we have always relied on this system because we're indoctrinated, you know. I tell people, you know, they may not agree, but in a sense, we're all practicing. We're, in a sense, we're all racist. But because we have been indoctrinated in a racist society. But the difference is being a practice racist. There's practice racism that deals with policy that set things like this in course. And because we haven't learned to coerce and collaborate our resources, we always become the victim of victimization, because we don't realize that we can make a difference if we work together.
Okay, well, we're coming up swiftly on 5 minutes. I want to get this last piece in, and thank you, caller, for that question. We're talking about the questionable leadership in terms of our president and his form of leadership and governance, if you will. And in terms of the medical suggestions that he made in terms of how to sanitize yourself, if you will, and then some of the things that he's tweeted in terms of inspiring people to go out, and I know we have the right to free speech, but I think some of the things that's put out there has been divisive. Callers first, and then Stan, you can jump in. And so I'm opening it up to the callers first to get some input on that, and then we'll wrap it back around with Stan. Anything, callers?
Hi, this is Tiffany. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hey, Tiffany, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. So I think that what we have known and seen about this presidency, even before this presidency, is that Trump really cares much about his own interests. And I think that one of the dilemmas for us as Black people is that the statistics are pointing to us as the victims. And so this can, in so many ways, look like an extension of another Southern strategy, you know, where
dog whistle language, promoting the alt-right, Second Amendment. He mentioned that in one of the protests by enabling the governors and stripping the governors of their capacities to actually lead by taking their equipment or even provoking these protests further against the government, I mean, the governors and the legislation in individual states. It causes confusion. Of course, it's misleading, but ultimately the goal is to, again, attack lower class and people of color. And unfortunately, we get into this cycle where, you know, you have poor white people often, not always, that will go against their best interest because, again, this falls back onto white supremacy and how we are looking to disenfranchise specific groups so that other groups can capitalize, because there are people who are capitalizing on this. And, you know, those people get to sit in their cushy privileged places and call it a wrap while the people who lack that privilege are out dying in the service industry. So, I mean, I think we just have to call it what it is. It's protecting his interests. It's not taking responsibility of the bad, but taking responsibility for the good and then promoting people that will further push his agenda.
Hi, this is Yolanda. I just wanted to kind of piggyback on what Tiffany just said. And I do think that was just an excellent point, particularly about this not just being happenstance, but strategic. So when you talked about the Southern strategy, it really got me thinking about, you know, we may be thinking that the information that we get, right, we get information based on what they allow us to hear. And so a lot of, I think, these openings are really strategic. And like you said, they're hitting at the most vulnerable populations, and you infuse that with the so-called, I guess, stimulus, right, checks and stuff that we have also received. But even within that, right, Trump is challenging immigrants or immigrant people who are married to immigrants when he is also married to an immigrant and not getting the checks and who gets the checks and who doesn't. And even now, if you think about how we compare to other nations in taking care of our most vulnerable populations, which often include black and brown people for the majority, you know, look at how Canada is giving people, I think it's $2,000 a month in addition to the first amount that they gave them. But a lot of the people in Congress, particularly, are now saying that they don't want to give anybody any more money because they're not going to want to work. And that right there is such a stance of privilege to me, for people, again, to say that and not understand what it means to actually operate, particularly in just real life, but also in a pandemic. And I think all the things that are going on are really strategic, and we have to think about this less as stuff that has just happened by happenstance, and more about what is the strategy and what is the outcome that is desired, really, not only from our leadership, but from other people involved. So,
okay, Dan, what do you have?
Well, it goes around again, like you talk about the miracle round. We know what exists. We know what it is. I mean, this is America. What does that mean? What does it mean to be in America? I'm not an American. I'm an African that happened to be born in America. And the thing of it is that the history of that so-called American is one of destruction. It's just there with all people groups and all nations. And so I think that we are going to have to get back to our roots, the things that have brought us through severe times, to be able to navigate onto some semblance of sanity, because this man is not playing in terms of his and his agenda's not hidden at all. You know, we talk about.
Cut you off, but we got about 30 seconds, man. This is only a 30-minute show. You guys, thank you for calling. I hate to
we're
wrap you up.
We're still on the plantation, brother. We're still on the plantation, is what I'm trying to say. And we're still on the plantation, and even though people might not have a plantation mentality, the symptoms are there. We got to divorce
ourselves.
We'll
come back next week.
Thank you.
And talk about it.
beyond the sky. It's been a long, a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Somebody keep telling me don't.